Welcome to FYI, the four-year innovation podcast. This show offers an intellectual discussion on technologically enabled disruption, because investing in innovation starts with understanding it. To learn more, visit arc-invest.com.
ARK Invest is a registered investment advisor focused on investing in disruptive innovation. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK or podcast guests and are not endorsements or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Clients of ARK Investment Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of For Your Innovation, a podcast by ARK Invest on all things related to disruptive innovation. I'm Andrew Kim, an analyst covering consumer internet and fintech, joined by Nick Gruss, associate portfolio manager. Today, we have the great privilege of speaking with Matthew Warneford, CEO and founder of Dubbit. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for joining us today. Can you first introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us the founding story of Dubbit?
Yeah, sure. So I'm laughing because we started a long time ago. So we actually started the business 20 years ago as teenagers. You know, this was around the time when kind of, you know, multiplayer gaming was becoming possible over kind of like 56K modems, right? Like it was starting to work. And we had this idea, we sort of saw this experiment online of avatar-based chat rooms in a web browser. And we thought, wow, we have to do this. This is amazing. This is mind-blowing. Let's build that. And of course, being teenagers, you kind of go, well, look, how hard can it be? I don't know how to program, but we'll figure it out, right? We'll just work this out. And so that's what we did. That's how we started the business over 20 years ago, building our own, it was called a chat room then, but avatar-based chat room, virtual world, started working with brands. And of course, kind of fast forward to where we are now. You know, we're in a world where technology has finally made it possible to really create the kind of immersive worlds that we imagined all those years ago inside of platforms like Roblox. So if you kind of think of the business today, we kind of do two things, right? We work with brands that want to reach those players inside of platforms like Roblox. And then we're also building our own, let's call it apparel brands, fashion brands that are originating inside of Roblox, with the vision that we want to take those virtual brands outside into real world brands.
So you've seen, I guess, pseudo anonymous chat rooms, right, at its inception, and fast forward to today, seeing, you know, teenagers spend what was it, like 2 hours, 3 hours a day on Roblox, something absurd like that. And I just wanted to ask you, like, how has digital identity evolved from your point of view over time, and how are the teens of today treating digital identity differently to, say, you know, when, let's say, like 10 years ago, even when multiplayer was kind of just scaling to the masses?
Yeah, there's kind of an interesting, or at least here's how I think about it, right? So I think generally there are very few kind of new underlying human needs. There are just different ways that we meet those or express them. And so when I think about how people buy real world clothing or real world products, typically those products have an element of kind of function. So help buying a bag, it helps me take something from A to B. That's its purpose. And then it has an identity component. Generally speaking, I think we all would agree that at $100, you are not really getting any better ability to carry something from A to B in most cases. But people still spend thousands to tens of thousands of dollars on bags. And of course, the reason they do that is about what it says about them. And it can say lots of different things, but it's the identity piece is why we spend. And if you kind of think of nearly every purchase we make as having both functional and then some kind of identity component, then think about virtual items, and you realize that actually generally there's almost no functional component. It's entirely identity, right? It's that entire identity piece. And that's what I think we're seeing happen increasingly, is as people spend more time in these spaces, they're prepared to spend more on that identity component. And that's, I think, the shift that's starting to happen. And I feel like NFTs were a little bit of a signal of that, where we all hang out online now. We spend as many hours in Zoom calls or wherever it might be. How do we express ourselves? And that's where I think NFTs were going. And that's what I think we're seeing inside of these immersive worlds. It's not a new behavior. It's just a new way of being able to express our identity through a digital persona.
You're working with some real world brands today, bringing their fashion into the digital world. Could you give an example of that and just explain to the listeners how all of this works and what brands are trying to get out of being in Roblox and some of these other platforms?
There's kind of two ways to view this. So we have brands that are saying, I want to be here because here's where my consumers are, and I want them to engage with my brand early on, but I'm viewing this primarily as a marketing exercise. And then you have the option, which is, actually, I want to sell in here. I want to be an immersive retailer. And that's a very different strategy, by the way. It's a very different execution. But that's precisely what we're doing with Adidas. They're not trying to just do another brand campaign. They actually want to build a revenue line associated to gaming. And we believe that the best way for them to do that is to be a retailer in gaming rather than trying to make a hit game. Right? That's not the business they're in. However, right, it's a very, like, retailing in gaming is a very different business to retailing in the real world. And so there's a few things that we've learned. So over the last sort of, let's say even just 6 months, we've published over 3,000 different virtual clothes. Those clothes have been bought, you know, well over a million times. We're selling a lot of items. What we're learning is that each item that we sell, it's not making tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars per item. It's hundreds of dollars per item or thousands of dollars per item. Very, very different for the world that Adidas operates in. But of course, the marginal cost per item is zero. So once you've made it, the cost is zero. So it creates a very different strategy to actually be successful. This is what Adidas are doing. We're using AI to help create those items and bring that production cost down. Then secondly, in order to create more hits. So what you find is that 10% of the items you create will sell 10 times better than the rest. Like, it's very, very normal in these kind of digital ecosystems. How do you create more of those? Well, you do that through data, through observing what works. And then, of course, the third and most important thing is you create at scale. If each item makes hundreds to thousands of dollars, you have to make a lot of items. You have to publish hundreds of items a month. And so when you think about the two very different strategies here, you've got the Adidas strategy of, I want to build a business and I'm going to publish a lot of items. I'm going to be data-driven. And then you've got kind of the marketing-driven strategy, which is, let's just get my product in the hands of consumers. They'll wear it, but we're not connecting that through to any kind of revenue objective yet.
And can you explain how the stores are set up across Roblox? I understand that you work with different games and sell through assets to those games. Maybe if you can just explain that and take the listeners through how they may, you know, access one of your stores.
You can buy virtual items in mainly two places in Roblox. They have the Roblox catalog, which is the kind of web-based or app-based store. And then there's the ability to buy inside of 3D experiences. So what we do with Adidas and we do with our own brands, the brands that we create, is we create retail locations inside of some of the popular games in the platform. the benefit to the game is pretty straightforward. They get a big cut of every sale that happens inside of that platform, inside of that store. And of course, we like to think it's beneficial to them because we're so focused on making great items that sell well. If we're their retail partner, we can help them monetize their game better than they can themselves. So we create pop-up stores that go inside of popular games. Players visiting those games can go into the store. And of course, the great advantage or benefit that we get from that is then we start to learn, what are people looking at? What are they browsing? What are they trying on? What do they buy? And of course, that data then goes back into the data lake that informs the items that we create. That, of course, leads to better selling items, which only benefits the games again, because now the games are making more money because they're selling more items for us, and it creates a nice feedback loop.
And I guess historically, has just leaning on a digital storefront worked? As in, are brands demanding more immersive, like experiential, like commerce flows in which, you know, you are winning Adidas merch as part of a mini game or a scavenger hunt? Like, is there more pressure to do that? Or has the standalone kind of digital storefront worked and it's, you know, tried and true for you?
Yeah, it diverges based on those two goals. Am I doing a marketing exercise? Am I doing a revenue exercise? So we've given away millions of virtual clothes for a variety of different brands, H&M, NASCAR, sporting events, all kinds of different brands. Obviously, Roblox players, you know, they love it, right? They go crazy for those free items. You know, to help put this in perspective, they bought something like 2 billion items last year. You know, they're buying a huge amount of items. So when you give away free branded items, they go really fast. So what you tend to try and do is build some kind of challenge, some kind of event, some kind of activation that just makes it so it's a little bit harder to get the items and there's more engagement with the brand. That's on the brand side of that. On the revenue generating side, the kind of purer retail side, what we actually do, we built this only in the last month or so, is players who shop and buy any of our products, whether it's Adidas or our own products, they can earn loyalty points. And those points can then be used to redeem against free items inside of those stores. So again, it's just a reward to the players who shop. The logic here being, by the way, again, very unsurprising, but we know that a minority of the Roblox players buy a very significant portion of the virtual items. So, of course, those best customers are the customers that you want to attract and reward inside of your stores. So those are the kind of the two different ways that we use that. Coming later this year, we'll be connecting those reward points to an off-platform reward website where you'll then be able to use them to redeem the reward points earned inside of the store's shopping for discounts on real-world product. That's not something that we're doing specifically with Adidas. I'm not saying that's the case, but just that's part of the product roadmap, is to connect what you purchase online with then offline benefits or off-platform benefits.
That's a great segue into the Walmart Roblox news that just hit this week. Can you talk about the kind of virtual commerce to, you know, real world commerce conversion opportunity and how you guys have been thinking about it over the past few years?
Look, I'm very much of the view that where we spend time, first of all, is where the money goes. And so whether that's advertising spend or consumer spend, I think it's an inevitability. So I kind of look at this, I sort of step back a little bit and go, what are the shifts that we've been through in commerce? Of course, we had e-commerce, whatever, 20 years ago, mobile commerce now tremendously large. We're seeing very significant headway being made in social commerce. And I feel like it's an inevitability that as players spend more time inside of these immersive 3D spaces, that we see the rise of immersive commerce. And so I think what we're seeing happening here with Walmart is very much the beginning of, again, in my opinion, a relatively inevitable behavior that people will shop inside of these spaces. And again, like, look at the behaviors, the trends that are already existing. They bought 2.2 billion items last year. They are used to shopping inside of that ecosystem. It's not that hard to imagine a world where that transitions into real world purchases. And I think the key thing for people to keep in mind here is not to think of Roblox as a gaming platform. So while there are games on Roblox, it's not that everything is a game. And of course, even a lot of the games don't look like games that would have existed on, you know, being commissioned by traditional games publishers. And so I think there's a really important way to kind of view this, which is we very much talk to brands, anyone that will listen really, about this idea that we're in the middle of the sort of third wave of user-created content. So we had the first wave at the beginning of the internet, user-created text, made it easy for anyone to become a publisher. Very disruptive to print. You know, we all know what's happened to the magazine and the print industries over time. 10 years-ish on, we had user-created video enabled by YouTube and now TikTok. But the key piece here is that was accelerated by the smartphone. Without the smartphone, YouTube would never have been as big as it is today because it made recording and creating content so much easier. What I think we're about to see with platforms like Roblox is user-created 3D, where 3D could mean virtual clothes, it can mean retail, concerts, events, social spaces, games, that will be accelerated by generative AI. Generative AI is the thing that will make creation 10 times easier, in the same way that the smartphone made creation 10 times easier for video. And so my point that I'm getting to here around commerce is I think we're going to see a tremendous explosion of the amount of content created and published to platforms like Roblox, Fortnite, potentially some of the others. All of that content attracts consumer attention in just the same way that YouTube has all different kinds of content that would have never been published on broadcast TV that just attracts people from different niches, different interests. That's exactly what we're seeing in Roblox now. It's going to accelerate. It's going to steal attention from, let's call it, the incumbent platforms. And the point that I'm trying to get to here is a lot of this content is not strictly what we would call gaming. It's not like playing in Fallout, right? That doesn't go away. YouTube didn't kill the theatrical release, but it means we spend less time watching video in other places because there's 24 hours in the day. And so I think we're at the beginning of this UGC 3D. People are hanging out in these places and people will spend money where they spend time. And so I think the fact that Walmart has done this now already to me is hugely exciting.
It's a really interesting analogy comparing generative AI and to the iPhone moment for photo and video. And I think we couldn't agree more. I think we've internally been talking about we're entering an era of what we would call quotation mark zero cost content creation. And I think that benefits video gaming more than any other content medium. I'm curious, as a company, as the CEO, how do you try to separate the company from other players, given, you know, this tool is going to be ubiquitous across most platforms. Most creators will have some ability. It's text prompting, so it's fairly intuitive. How do you see yourself separating from the pack and maintaining a lead in the space?
So we are very, very excited about the immersive retail, immersive commerce opportunity here. And both enabling brands like Adidas to be virtual retailers inside of these platforms, but also building our own brands. And the reason why I keep using this word brand is partly back to this idea of what happens in a world of infinite content. Right? When the cost to create goes to zero, how do you differentiate? What does that mean? My suspicion is, first of all, humans, there's lots of kind of experiments that have shown, you know, the famous one with jam in a supermarket, when you have like a whole aisle full of jam, people actually buy less, right? Because it's overwhelming. It's the paradox of choice. We need heuristics to help us make decisions. We can't evaluate everything. Brands know this, by the way. FMCG brands have been doing this for years. They just make it easy. Oh, I'll buy Coke. Right? I'll buy whatever dish soap, blah, 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 because it's overwhelming. So my suspicion is, in a world of overwhelming content, brand actually becomes more important as a way of both expressing my own identity with respect to clothing here and apparel and the worlds that I'm operating in, but also just as a filter for where do I start? There's just too much choice. There's too many options. And so what I think we'll start to see is I'm not saying necessarily one ginormous brand, like sort of the Nike of the world or whatever, but we'll see many, many smaller brands that appeal to lots of different niches. And so what we're trying to do as a business is, first of all, start building those now, but also start collecting data that helps us understand who are the consumers, what are the niches, what are the opportunities, how do we create those and get a positive feedback on collecting data, driving sales, building brands, and getting that feedback loop going. Because I think, you know, again, in a world of just infinite content, how do you choose? How do you cut through? And I think that's a challenge.
And there's a playbook for what you're explaining. You had sent over, and we did some prep for this, Moonbugs, which I think is what you're speaking to. Maybe if you can explain what happened there. That was another, you know, platform, YouTube, bit more mature, but if you could explain that for the listeners, because I think that's an interesting case study of what you're explaining. And you're just saying we should see this now in video gaming or in these UGC 3D experience platforms as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. So Moonbug's really interesting for a bunch of reasons. In short, what they did was they found some of the very best kids content on YouTube. They acquired those creators, those businesses. They then used a whole bunch of just analysis of data, what's popular on there, and built incredible off YouTube businesses, taking either creating premium content for Netflix, for Prime, creating merchandise, music, all kinds of brand extensions around that IP. So they were incredibly smart. You'd almost call them like the Disney, the modern day Disney almost, in the way that they found content that was cutting through, that had a big audience, but it's hard to monetize that, at least it's hard to maximize the value of that IP if you only operate inside of YouTube. And of course, a lot of the creators that were making this content had never had to figure out, how do I do deals creating physical merchandise? How do I work with Netflix? How do I do all of these different things? So that's what they did. And they sold to Candle Media for about $3 billion, having bought some of the top kids content on YouTube. But one of my favorite stories about them, and the reason why I think they were so smart going into kids, is a lot of YouTube content that we'll think of as adults is we'll think of it as a human, right? An actual person who we are watching. It's very hard to scale a person, right? There's one person. When it's animated content, it doesn't matter. You can just make more of it, right? It's a character. You can put on stage shows with those characters all around the world at the same time. One of my favorite things they did is they bought a kids show called Blippi, which actually had a human actor. They replaced the actor. The kids didn't realize, because they're like 5 years old. Whereas you can't do that with Mr. Beast, right? You can't just swap him out. It doesn't work. But it worked with kids. One of the reasons why I love gaming and what we're looking at here, where we are actively working with some of the biggest fashion designers on Roblox, is that it's not a personality, right? It's not a person that's there. it's their brand. And so that is something that you can professionalize, you can scale, you can take off platform into the real world, and all of those kind of things that you can do to build, you know, a truly significant business. That's much harder to do if you are looking at, say, Maker Studios, where they were acquiring a lot of real world creators whose brand was their personality. And that's why I think Moonbug is so smart.
And they were behind Cocomelon as well, right? I think that one most people would yeah, that's the one that made it to Netflix. Super interesting. And I like the point around, you don't have a key person risk or a key creator risk when it is animated or digital. And that, again, lends itself more to the video 3D experience space.
It does. And so there's a great podcast. I'm sure you guys have seen the Acquired podcast series. And they do these fantastic, like, 4-hour long deep dives. I'm currently listening to the Microsoft one. But there's this fantastic one where they dive into LVMH, which is the luxury fashion group. And listening to that podcast a little while back, one of the things that struck me there, and is very, it's actually very relevant to Moonbug, but also to how I view the world of virtual fashion. What LVMH has done incredibly well is acquire, in their case, real world iconic brands, but then almost professionalize and centralize all of the non-core services. And so, like, Jeff Bezos talks about this as well with, like, if you're a beer company, you know, focus on the beer, right? So if you're a fashion brand, focus on the product. But then their central services worry about things like retail locations, manufacturing, marketing, all of these centralized services that allowed them to just focus on the content, in that case, the fashion. And so if you look again at someone like Moonbug, that's what they were able to do, was take great content, let the team that were great at creating the content just do that bit, and professionalize or centralize all of the other bits that those creators were not doing. And I think there's a very similar kind of lens in which to view what we're doing in fashion. We're building our own virtual fashion brands in Roblox, but there's other amazing creators that we're working with as well who don't have, haven't built, like we have, these ginormous data lakes where we can predict what's going to be a hit. They haven't got AI pipelines for creating items. They haven't got virtual stores. They haven't got the brand relationships. You know, they're not able to take these back into the real world, but they have a great brand and they have followers. So there's a lot of parallels here between what we've seen in fashion, LVMH, you know, for years, YouTube before it, and of course now in that next platform, that next disruptive platform.
I wanted to just go back to your comment on a world in which we have infinite supply of digital content. With the supermarket aisle analogy, one could imagine that consumers get overwhelmed by the choice, the infinite number of choices, because there is no TikTok screen, right? There is no curated discovery surface that's spoon-feeding the consumer from, like, the supply into, you know, what the consumer would like. And my question is, with, like, the Roblox discovery surface or TikTok, et cetera, does brand differentiation or brand equity in the traditional sense matter as much? Or, like, are brands going to have to concede a lot of their power to these algorithmic content surfaces? Because, like, that's the sole way that consumers discover new brands in the first place.
It's an area we think about a lot. And so I think the fashion side, the clothing side, is slightly different. And I could be wrong, but the reason why I think it's different is whenever I go into a virtual world, into a Roblox game, into an experience like that, I am seeing hundreds to thousands of other people and I'm seeing what they're wearing. I don't see what other games they're playing, but I do see what they're wearing. And if I like it, I can then browse that. So I think while the algorithm is very, very important for that discoverability, I think there are other paths to discoverability. So one is, what are people wearing? Another are things like the retail locations that we're building inside of those popular games. So players who are inside of them are encountering the stores. But inevitably, the platforms will always have power. But I think the, again, slight difference is I care about how I'm perceived in the spaces where I spend time. So I care about how I'm perceived in the office, in my case, at the tennis club, in the social spaces I hang out. We have an identity and a persona. And I think brand is something that communicates that. It's not just what does it look like. People want to have something that expresses a bit about who they are. And so I think brand will still have power. But of course, will it be as powerful? And will it be easier for the algorithm to maybe hide certain brands? Yeah, I think it is.
Maybe we can consider UGC gaming as kind of evolving with a 10-year lag, maybe, to traditional social media, right? In that we finally have the 3D space in which you can actually view, right, what other people are wearing in the first place, like a la, I guess, Instagram in 2014 when I was scrolling through celebrities' feeds and being influenced by what they were wearing, right? Whereas now with traditional social media, that's completely converted over from follow and feed to algorithmic content. So I do wonder, you know, maybe 10, 15 years down the line, what brand discovery on Roblox would look like.
Yeah, and look, I'm kind of the view that all of these things are not, it's not binary outcomes in these platforms. So what we have 24 hours in the day, and that's going to get carved up between sleeping, eating, whatever, right, we have to do, and the platforms we choose to spend time on. I don't think UGC 3D, these immersive platforms, replaces social media that exists. It doesn't replace TikTok. It doesn't replace Instagram. But it probably means that there's a very significant number of people, likely in the billions, that are spending less time on those platforms and more time inside of those immersive spaces. And I think because of that, it inevitably changes to some degree where brands are discovered. And so kind of part of my thinking here around why would we try and build brands in games that go into the real world, and why not just do that on social media, is to some degree the power of the algorithm that exists today makes it quite difficult to be discovered. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I think generative AI for the next at least 5 to 10 years, or no, let's say 5 years, 10 years, hard to tell in tech, the next 5 years benefits the Robloxes and Fortnites of the world because it creates so much more content that will attract so much more consumers because the bar to creating that content is higher. I suspect the ability to create text and pictures and video makes the existing social platforms noisier and probably makes discovery harder and makes the algorithm even more important. So my suspicion is those channels get worse as generative AI, or sorry, worse for brands, not worse for the consumer, worse for brands and discoverability, whereas gaming, or at least UGC 3D and gaming, I think benefits for the next 5 years. 10 to 15 years out, it's really hard to sort of understand what that looks like.
I know we touched a little bit on this in the beginning, but when you were talking about the role of identity in fashion, I think it's kind of clear, you know, looking at just worldwide luxury sales, that identity has kind of overtaken utility, right? And my question for you in the virtual goods space is like, where exactly are we in terms of how consumers or Roblox players are treating the identity portion? And is it always, do you think, going to be benchmark in some way to the underlying like cogs to produce that virtual good? As in, you know, will Gucci Garden on Roblox always have to price, at least initially, right? Not secondary transactions, a bag much more cheaply than it would price a physical bag.
There's almost a few bits to sort of tease apart. So you have luxury products, which there's a great quote from Coco Chanel that I forget now, but the principle is that sort of luxury starts where quality or value kind of almost ends. And that's not the quote, so I'm not getting this right. But the point I'm making is with something like an iPhone, that's a premium product. Something like a $2,000 handbag is a luxury product. And so those convey kind of different things. There's degrees of overlap. But when you're buying a $2,000 handbag, you're not buying it for the same reason that you're buying an iPhone. The iPhone still has a big, big chunk of utility in there. But it's premium. And so I think there will be premium brands inside of these gaming luxury brands inside of these gaming platforms. I think that's what we were seeing with NFTs. I think we will see it, and we are seeing it again. People, you know, somebody bought a virtual item in Roblox for $10,000 that gave them access to, I think it was the Lamborghini factory or something. We're going to see those things. But I think we need to recognize that the majority of us, when we purchase clothes, it's not necessarily about luxury status. But, you know, look at a brand like Patagonia. You buy that, it says something about your choices to source materials ethically, to be reusable and so on. There's lots of, you know, you wear a band t-shirt, that says something about you. You wear Vans shoes. Like, there's just so many different aspects of personality that get projected. And so I'll give you an example from the clothes that we create. For whatever reason, goth clothes very well, just sell really, really well. So again, you could almost call it like the equivalent of like the Hot Topics of the real world, right? Do really well in Roblox. But also just like crazy stuff. Like some of our best sellers are just robots you can wear. It's like giant transformer bodies. And so I think we have to be kind of cognizant that apparel and clothing is not luxury in all cases. It can be. But there's a big part of different aspects of my identity that I want to express. And so that's why when I sort of talk about things like, you know, intentionally saying fast-moving consumer goods, those, the sort of Unilevers of the world, they spend tremendous amounts of money on brand advertising rather than kind of performance-based advertising, because they want you, whether you shop in the supermarket, on Amazon, wherever, you just will search for, you know, in the UK, Fairy Liquid dish soap, because that's the brand you know. They just take the choice away because you just don't care enough to research which is the best. And so I think what we'll find is there'll be lots of people who like, look, I want to dress like a goth. I want to dress like whatever. And there'll be brands for all of the different niche interests and like way, way, way more niches than exist today. Because you don't have to have physical retail locations and true like cost of making goods and marginal costs and wastage and staff and blah, blah, blah. And that's exactly what we saw on YouTube again. If you think back to if you pull back, what is the internet? The internet's a machine that makes distribution free, right? That's ostensibly what it does. So any business that was previously predicated on its defensibility being distribution was tremendously changed by the internet. That's what happened with newspapers. The business moat was built around distribution. Video, broadcast, put satellites in space, cables, whatever it is, huge amounts of infrastructure spend. Internet replaces that. What we're seeing here with 3D or any of these UGC platforms when the internet replaces it, sorry, is because there's so many more people that can become publishers because those costs of participating have dropped. You see an explosion of content that would have never been commissioned in the world that came before it. That's what I think we're seeing now inside of platforms like Roblox, with both the games being created, but the variety of clothes and who they appeal to. And that's exactly what we saw in YouTube. Creators became brands. That's what Moonbug did, what others have done. Creators became brands that would have never been able to exist in the world that came before. And they appeal to so many different niches of interest. And I think we'll see exactly that. So my point being is luxury is a segment of brands, but it's not the only thing that expresses my personality.
In terms of luxury, part of the equation is embedded scarcity. How do you think about that in the digital world? Because part of the NFT story was, for the first time, you're able to embed scarcity into the digital realm, which in most cases, everything is infinite because you had no way to trace back ownership. So how do you think about that on platforms like Roblox and others?
Yeah, obviously, Roblox does have a concept of limited items. First of all, you can create limited items, and they're playing around with, how many can you publish? I think it recently changed to maybe 4,000, so that became the upper bound for the quantity that you can create. And then there's also simply price. Price does create I'm hesitating because in normal economics, right, we ought to see a decrease in demand, but there are in luxury kind of Velben goods where actually price can increase and the desire for it actually goes up, sales increase. But generally speaking, I think price does seem to correlate to the number of purchases inside of Roblox. The problem that exists today is when people buy luxury items, not everybody. But there's a big part of status signaling. And how do you do that when people don't know what you paid for something because the brands are not necessarily obvious? So if you see someone wearing a Hermes belt, you know that they've paid a lot of money to hold their trousers up. And so that conveys some degree of status, or at least willingness to spend money on belts. How do you know that in Roblox? Like, those things don't exist today. And so that's one part of the problem. I think you can then do it through just limited quantities. But again, like, without a brand that people are familiar with, how do you achieve your goal of conveying status? And so part of my opinion with the NFT projects is that, again, some of the ones that were successful early on were famous. And it was that infamy that at least helped them retain a bit more value because they became kind of like brands, right? At least, Bored Apes and so on. They have a bit of a brand value that your average person recognizes. When you've got a flood of stuff, why? Even with limited quantities, how am I achieving my goal? Like, the job to be done for a lot of people when they buy luxury goods is convey status. But if just it, like, limited quantity doesn't mean that I can convey status. And so that to me, again, is the role of brand in all of this and why it was always going to be very difficult for a lot of these NFTs to genuinely become the Rolex of, the internet.
Sometimes I think an opportunity that Roblox could pursue is like Club Penguin giving everyone like limited real estate, just like, this is my house, and what better way to convey status than like very visually opulent, accessories or furniture, whatnot in the house, or maybe it's a big house too, to kind of offset what you've been saying about how that kind of scarcity value is harder to discern, I guess, with just apparel or avatar specific accessories, unless it's like a very big, transformer type skin. But yeah, I often think about giving every Roblox player like a little crib,
Yeah, look, I think people like to collect, display, organize their stuff, right? Like, we, again, there's so much of just existing behaviors just get replicated in new ways. So I think people do like to show these things off. And I want to be careful to make it sound like status is the only thing, because it's not, right? Like, in our office, the number of just like different toys and collectibles that are on desks, they're not there because of status specifically. They could buy more expensive things. They're just expressing personality, right? And so again, clothes, virtual items, You want to express who you are to other people. We like to do that as humans. It helps us form relationships and connections. And so I think a big part of kind of what works with those or worked with those Club Penguin igloos or whatever they were called is just it's creative. It's fun just showing off my stuff. But also I can show off my personality. It doesn't need to be that I've got the most expensive things. It's just, hey, this is who I am, right? And that's, again, just such a big part of the items that we buy. You buy and wear Patagonia versus something else. It says you're doing that in part because of the product quality and in part because of what that brand image says and aligns to your personal values. And that's what I think will happen inside of these virtual spaces. And again, whether it's, you know, a room or something else, the more that platforms like Roblox give people the ability to express themselves, I'm generally of the view that that's a good thing for the platform. People buy in to the places where they can invest themselves into.
And I guess before we conclude our podcast, Matt, just wanted to thank you again. There were some really great bits here, and it seems like you and Dubbit are at the forefront riding various secular tailwinds that we definitely agree with respect to, you know, UGC taking over all kind of, well, most if not all consumer attention in the next decade, and virtual worlds becoming that official third place that we were promised, I guess, a decade ago or so. And before we conclude, I just wanted to ask one last question. What's next for Dubbit? And how do you see Dubbit evolving over the next 5 years? And how do you think Roblox will, what do you think Roblox will look like in 5 years' time?
I'll start with Roblox. Right? I am obviously super bullish on both Roblox and the UGC kind of 3D platforms. I think those grow over the next 5 years. You know, Roblox probably has 700-800 million MAUs. Maybe more. There's going to be 1 billion people regularly playing inside of user-created 3D spaces. I am absolutely certain that gaming is a big subset of that, but it's not going to look like gaming looks like on console or mobile. You know, in the same way that YouTube content doesn't look like what's on TV or at the theater, the cinema. I think Roblox and the other platforms steal a lot of time from traditional gaming, whether that's on mobile or elsewhere, which will lead to, in my opinion, a lot of those game studios reorganizing, which will then lead to talent coming into Roblox as they go, well, I'll give this thing a try. So that's a good flywheel for Roblox. And I think it becomes quite disruptive to fashion and probably real world events. As people spend more time in there, they'll shift some of their spend into that ecosystem as well. And then where do I think Dubbit fits into this? So I like to think within 5 years, we are still working with some of the amazing brands, the Adidas's, the Unilevers, the H&M's, the NASCARs of the world. But I also like to think that we've probably sold by that point in time. I like that we'll be the first people to have sold 1 billion virtual clothes across our portfolio of owned brands and partner brands. And I like to think that we will have launched 10 of our own brands into the real world within 5 years. And of course, our vision is, of all the different brands that we're creating now, the 3,000 clothes we published in the last 6 months, that's going to keep scaling up. And those clothes, those brands that become most popular, that are being bought, you know, tens of millions of times, we want to make real world brands out of those. So I think we'll be both continuing to help real world brands engage with their customers inside of our retail environments. But equally, we'll be partnering with those same brands in the real world with the brands that we're creating today that are going to emerge out of gaming platforms like Roblox.
Amazing. Thank you. I guess the next time we have you on, hopefully we can talk about avatar brands scaling into you know, all-encompassing brands, real life and virtual. That's, I guess, a topic that we didn't really touch on, but I would love to explore that with you next time. But again, thank you so much, Matt, for all your time and insights. We learned so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, really enjoyed it.
ARC believes that the information presented is accurate and was obtained from sources that ARC believes to be reliable. However, ARC does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information, and such information may be subject to change without notice from ARC. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this podcast may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARC's current views and assumptions, and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements.